Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 1, Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair, a tale of Victorian horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 8, The Bathing Chamber. Early summer, 1885. Milford Coyle held back a large drop cloth, and Lady Iwanaga lifted her skirt slightly to make her way into the nearly completed grand foyer. She walked as nimbly as a cat on the boards which covered the unfinished marble floor. The framework of partially plastered timbers towered overhead as work on the enormous mansion neared completion. Milford was a short, stoutish man with bright blue eyes, pink cheeks, and rather prodigious ginger sideburns. He had made his fortune in the recent lumber boom on the West Coast, and now, at 50, he rather fit the mold of the Irish well-to-do gentleman. Milford was currently going on at length about how the imported Italian marble floors would soon shine like mirrors, and how the Austrian crystal chandeliers would dazzle the eye.
"Nothing but the finest for my new beloved."
Lady Iwanaga seemed somewhat less than impressed. She surveyed her surroundings and merely nodded, as if to say, "It will do." The new Mrs. Coyle was dressed in the latest Parisian finery, a rich emerald green which enhanced her pale skin as well as her dark features. Partially shaded under a perched hat made of iridescent raven wings, her long hair was braided and coiled like a black serpent at the nape of her slender neck. Mr. and Mrs. Coyle were a strange pair, to be sure. Though both of short stature, Iwanaga had the grace and delicacy of a porcelain doll. Milford, however, carried a certain amount of clumsy girth around the middle. The straining seams of his gentlemanly wardrobe seemed at odds with his colossal midriff, rather giving him the impression of a waistcoated, oviform gnome. Other differences were obvious as well. Milford's eyes seemed to widely bask in the splendor around him, while Iwanaga's gaze assessed and measured everything she surveyed. Either way, they did seem to share a mutual appreciation for the finer things. Their brief courtship and subsequent nuptials had raised quite a few eyebrows, mostly out of sympathy for Coyle. Lady Iwanaga had earned a rather colorful reputation across Europe for holding seances that always produced dramatic results. The ever-beguiling lady's talent for communicating with the spirit world was only second to her skill for scandalizing polite society by snaring the occasional tycoon. The dropcloth parted once again, and another gentleman entered the room. Eudoxus Whitforce, architect extraordinaire. He, like his overly pomaded hair, oozed a certain continental charm. He had made his fortune designing fabulous residences across Europe for the right prominent people. Now, as monarchies crumbled and the old money dwindled, he had set his sights on the States. Iwanaga knew him, of course. They had orbited in similar social circles. Whipforce had done his share of gossiping about Iwanaga and her exploits, but since America was the land of clean slates, as it were, their differences had been set aside as their collaboration proceeded. Coyle House was Whipforce's first large commission in the States. It was to be his career maker, the envy of some of the mightiest names on Nob Hill, Crocker, Stanford, Hopkins, and Flood. Their common little hovels would quaver at the sight of his monumental castle perched on its dramatic summit. And after years of construction, his masterpiece was nearly complete. Whipforce joined Coyle and unraveled a roll of blueprints. He began hastily reviewing last-minute construction details and pointing out various design features to his rapt benefactor. Their chattering echoed around the cavernous hall as Lady Iwanaga trailed silently in their wake. When Whipforce had seemed to run out of things to comment on, the lady broke the silence.
"And what about my requests? The designs I gave you?"
Whipforce seemed to falter and twiddled his mustache.
"But of course, my lady. We were just putting the finishing touches on those now. My assistant will escort you immediately."
Whipforce looked about, when clearly there was no one about.
Now where has he got to? De Winter!"
A tall man appeared at the head of the marble staircase above them. Lady Iwanaga's gaze seemed to fix on him as he descended the stairs while straightening his modest wool suit. She averted her eyes before he noticed her regard.
Well, and it's about time, too. I don't pay you to stare out of windows, boy. We have enough to attend to around here, and that does not include you stopping to appreciate the view.
You will kindly take her ladyship down to the bathing chamber, and see if that fool down there is finished tinkering yet.
Whitforce's words blew over the young man like a typhoon, yet his bluster seemed to have minimal effect. It was only Whitforce addressing him as boy that caused Devinter to bristle. The young man crossed the room towards Lady Iwanaga and bowed.
Yokoso Iwanaga-sama,
he said with his eyes lowered. Mrs. Coyle seemed surprised at his formal welcome in her native tongue. The merest glimmer of a smile spread across her face, then vanished. The lady offered her hand, which he lightly kissed.
Please, I currently find it more convenient to be addressed as Mrs. Coyle.
Their eyes met for a moment, then Devinter resumed his cultured tone.
This way, my lady, if you please.
The color rose slightly at Whitforce's collar.
Ooh, that lad needs to be knocked down a peg or two.
He acts well above his station.
Whitforce paused when he realized he was talking to himself. Milford Coyle had tottered off childlike, obviously mesmerized by the opulence around him and quite oblivious to anything else. Whitforce sighed heavily, then joined Coyle and continued their tour. Devinter led the way down a freshly plastered corridor. He paused and cleared his throat.
So, per your instructions, the entrance to the bathing chamber is private?
Devinter pressed an innocuous-looking panel that clicked open, revealing a hidden staircase. Mrs. Coyle seemed satisfied and followed him down. The staircase was a little precarious as it had no railing. It wound down steeply into a large room with a vaulted ceiling. The freshly tiled walls shone in the flickering gaslight.
I do hope everything is to your liking. I'll tell you, you've got Whitforce baffled with this design of yours. We've had to enlist a specialist, a young local chap, completely barking but very clever with these newfangled mechanizations of yours, as well as getting that blasted tank down here.
A sly smile spread across Mrs. Coyle's face as they reached the bottom of the stairs. There was an empty circular pool sunk in the center of the room, and a mysterious square glass tank with iron reinforcements sitting in the corner. The sounds of hammering echoed off of the tiled walls when suddenly, a bespectacled young man with a mop of dirty blonde hair popped up from inside the empty pool.
Hey, hello there, Devinter. Good to see ya. Well, that's the last of the pipes fitted.
Devinter smiled thinly.
Yes, may I present Mr. Vernal Golden? His services have proved to be invaluable.
Mrs. Coyle nodded, and Mr. Golden beamed.
Tweren't nothing. The lady's designs for her tea maker were perfectly specific. A bit odd, though. A pool full of tea all the way down here?
Mrs. Coyle smiled.
Well, her needs are very particular.
She glanced at the large tank in the corner. It was filled with an amber-brown liquid, and something dark stirred within its depths.
I wanted to ask you about that. What you got in there? Some kind of squid or jellyfish or other?
Mrs. Coyle crossed the chamber and tapped on the side of the tank. A dark shape pressed itself on the inside of the glass.
No, she's my baby, my constant companion.
Both Devinter and Golden seemed slightly taken aback.
But aren't you afraid of it getting out?
Devinter noted the pool, which had no bars or any conceivable sort of lid.
Out? No, she always stays with me, of course.
Mrs. Coyle caressed the glass once more. The dark shape within seemed to be following her hand.
But so much travel does not agree with her. This will have to be the last time she is moved.
Devinter and Golden stood fixated and silent.
Did you know that in ancient Egypt, the pharaohs killed the architects and his assistants after they'd completed their tombs? So the secret of the tomb went to the grave with them?
Devinter's eyes sparkled.
Why, yes, such a quaint custom. I could certainly understand doing away with the beastly architect, but not the poor assistant, surely.
Devinter and Golden chuckled uneasily. Mrs. Coyle remained silent and opaque. A clap of thunder sounded, startling Yuki awake suddenly. She sat up in her bed and, for the second time, wondered how she had gotten there. The sky outside looked dark and foreboding. A layer of swollen gray clouds loomed over the city. Raindrops began to tap on her windows. The ancient digital clock by her bed read 7:40 a.m. Then she noticed that her cell phone's little red light was blinking. At some point, the doctor had called the night before. Slowly, the events of the previous day reintroduced themselves to her. The tiled room with the tea pool and the thing behind the wall, and then a murky dream with someone named Lady Iwanaga. With a spark of realization, Yuki got out of bed. She crossed the room and climbed the wooden ladder, which was still hanging from her ceiling. Up in the tower room, the old photo was still there, the one from the 1915 exposition. She flipped it over and read the label again.
Desmond, Iwanaga, and Amako.
There she was, the woman from her dream. Devinter had been there too. And as Yuki looked at the photo again, she got a chill. The Mr. Devinter she had met the previous day and the man from her dream, as well as the photo, were the same. Yuki looked down at the cell phone in her hand and checked her voicemail. She stared out of the little tower window at the street below. She spotted the pink figure of Rosie von Bruin standing on the corner when the doctor's message began. Far from sounding sympathetic, the doctor actually sounded irritated. Busy and irritated.
Hi, Yuki. Well, I just got a call from Mrs. Flack. She's not very happy with you. She said that you just left for the day and didn't finish putting away some boxes or something. Yuki, please do what she says and don't just wander off. Mrs. Flack sounded very upset. So, let's knock off the acting out and attention-seeking behavior, all right? I don't want you to give Mrs. Flack a reason for having to call me again. Okay, bye-bye, love you.
Yuki pulled the phone away from her ear like it had stung her. She climbed back down the ladder, her rage bubbling just beneath the surface.
So much for calling for help or anything. Like the doctor's gonna listen to anything about being abandoned in a creepy house? Oh yeah, and should I mention that the place was haunted as well? Yeah, that's a good idea. The doctor's really gonna believe that.
And then down across the street at the cafe, Yuki saw Crowley. He was moving tables inside out of the rain.
Crowley.
If anyone would believe her, he would. Yuki slipped out of the house undetected. She knew she had at least a little time before Mrs. Flack would show up. She crossed the street and then tried to peek inside the cafe, looking out for any sign of Sloane.
Don't worry, she's upstairs.
Wearing a motorcycle jacket covered in painted flaming skulls, Crowley Golden was standing under the cafe's awning. He was stacking the last of the chairs in from the rain, which fell in a steady stream over the awning's edge like a beaded curtain. Yuki was already soaked and shivering by the time she joined him under the shelter of the awning.
Whoa, you missed it earlier. Rosie von Bruin's been running around all crazy. It seems Daisy has disappeared.
Then Crowley happened to notice that Yuki was sopping wet from the rain.
Oops, here, put this on. It's warm.
Crowley took off the leather jacket and handed it to Yuki.
Aw, thanks, but I wanted to talk to you about Tina.
Yuki brushed her soggy bangs out of her face and slipped the jacket over her shoulders.
Yeah, well, here goes. I think Tina is haunting my house.
Crowley's eyes widened. Yuki studied his face for a smirk or any trace of mockery, but there was none.
Really? Haunting, huh?
Yeah, I've seen her a few times now. She's talked to me and everything.
Crowley's eyes went a little wider.
Wow, you've spoken to her?
And then Yuki told him everything. About Tina's recent escape from the hissing ginger jar, then Tina screaming at the Lilac Acres van, then Tina finding the hidden playroom and Devinter showing up in a photo from 1915. Yuki stopped short of mentioning the tentacled monster that sounded like a kitten which had crawled out of the basement wall the day before. Crowley seemed pretty open, but everybody has their limits.
So Tina said it was Devinter and that guy Phil?
Phil Grave. I told you, Phil Grave's the guy with the van.
Right. And this has been going on since the 80s? And they're still doing it?
Well, I was there yesterday when Phil Grave showed up with a little kid, and who knows what happened to him.
Crowley nodded like he had a pretty good idea.
Whoa, so all the gossip is true then. vampires do live in the cursed castle.
Vampires?
Well, not all like fangs and crucifixes, but like some sort of evil vampiric cosmetological thing.
Well, okay, whatever you call it, it's bad, right?
Yeah. What about Tina? What does she have to say?
That's just it. Tina's been gone for a while now. I can't figure out what's happened to her.
Well, that's easy. She's probably just too tired to manifest. Remaining corporeal or even visible probably drains her energy. We could always try to summon her, I suppose. Crowley spoke very matter-of-factly, as if summoning spirits was an everyday event. He removed a purple crystal that dangled on a black silk cord from around his neck and handed it to Yuki. Here, try this if you see her. Amethyst should help her focus her energy. Before Yuki could inquire further, she was surprised to hear her cell phone ring. The notion of the doctor calling her with an apology evaporated when Yuki saw the caller ID. She flicked open the phone.
Hello, Mrs. Black.
She rolled her eyes at Crowley, who stifled a telltale giggle.
Yes, of course. I'll be right home. Yes, I know we have a big day.
Mrs. Flack persisted for a few more minutes, then finally let Yuki hang up. Let me guess. You've gotta go? Crowley smirked, and Yuki nodded.
I'd better get back before she goes totally mental. We'll have to talk later.
She went to remove the jacket, but Crowley stopped her. It's okay. You can wear it. Maybe Tina will remember it. Yuki nodded again with an awkward smile.
Okay, well, wish me luck. Bye.
Crowley waved and watched Yuki cross the street towards the cursed castle, the flaming skulls on the back of the jacket bobbing through the sheets of rain. He picked up the chair again and turned with a shock at the sight of his mother glowering at him through the cafe window. Yuki ran up the stairs and through the garden, trying to hold the collar of the jacket over her head to keep off the rain, but it didn't matter. By the time she had the front door open, she was drenched once again. Yuki jumped as Mrs. Flack suddenly appeared from behind a wooden panel in the entry hall.
Goodness, where have you been? There's so much to do.
Oh, I was...
Look at you. You're sopping wet. And what are you wearing?
Mrs. Flack frowned at the leather jacket. She produced a white fluffy towel for Yuki's wet hair as well as a paper shopping bag. Yuki inspected the contents and found a black cardigan sweater with a gold letter B embroidered on it.
It'll have to do for now, I'm afraid. What do you think?
Yuki thought it looked a few sizes too big, but it was still a million times better than the tutu from hell.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yuki followed Flack back through the hidden wooden panel. They entered the Belfair through a small wooden door under the marble stairwell.
I didn't have a chance to show you this yesterday. If any of the ladies wander up to the conservatory, you can roll the trolley up over there.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Flack pointed out a ramp that curved up along the wall to the landing above. Yuki nodded and followed Mrs. Flack's brisk steps towards the supply room. Yuki tried to peek discreetly through DeVinter's studio doors as they passed, but was unable to see anything. When they reached the supply room, Yuki hung Crowley's jacket over the back of the chair, finished drying her hair, and locked it down with the usual assortment of clips. She slipped on the black cardigan and automatically pushed up the sleeves. The tea maker was still steaming away in the corner. The woodsy, flowery scent was heavy in the room like incense. Mrs. Flack was reviewing her clipboard with her pen between her teeth. Her eyes scanned over her paperwork till she noticed Yuki standing at attention. She looked up and nodded.
Well, that's not too bad, I suppose. Okay, I've brought in a few things for Nibbles.
Yuki looked over at the tea trolley. Mrs. Flack had filled it to capacity with little dishes covered in finger sandwiches, tiny cakes piled high with creamy frosting, and other tasty delectables. Yuki looked dubiously at the load of food she was going to have to lug around. A small smile parted on Mrs. Flack's crimson lips.
Let's see if you can get anybody to eat anything.
Mrs. Flack's cell phone suddenly rang, and the smile fell from her face immediately. She scowled at the caller ID.
Oh, not again.
Mrs. Flack stepped away and answered the call.
Yes, hello.
Flack.
Yes.
Is everything ready?
Everything's ready.
Then where are you then?
Yes, all right. But I...
She snapped the phone closed, clearly vexed at being hung up on again. Mrs. Flack removed a sheet of paper from her clipboard and handed it to Yuki.
Here, look this over. It's the seating chart for our group today. They tend to congregate in the same spots, so it should be easy to manage. Just be polite and smile.
Okay.
Well, I need to go upstairs for a minute. I'll call you when we're ready.
She left Yuki alone with the tea maker steaming in the corner. Mrs. Fleck's seating chart was a diagram of the large foyer. Last names were written over the little clusters of seating. Yuki read over some of them. Guinness, Hindley, Dyer, Carstairs, Bilsey. One name near the bottom of the marble staircase had a large red X drawn through it. Battery.
Okay, we'll stay away from her.
Yuki was looking over the names on her chart again when a sudden chill ran down her spine. Then, just as suddenly, she realized why.
Boo!
A cold draft blew through the supply room. With a start, Yuki spun around to see Tina had reappeared, semi-solid behind her.
Ma, you scared me.
No duh. That's kind of the point.
Hmm. So where have you been?
Tina stretched out her arms and yawned.
Oh, yeah. I had to take it easy for a little while. And you know, I actually still feel pretty crappy.
Yuki reached into her pocket and produced the black silk cord with Crowley's amethyst crystal.
Hmm, let's see if this does anything.
Tina threw up her transparent hands.
What the hell is that? Some kind of hippie crystal? What are you gonna do? Balance my energy, man?
Yuki persisted despite Tina's protests. When the crystal came closer to Tina, there was a slight resonant ringing and Tina suddenly solidified.
Whoa! Hey now, that's better! Total upgrade.
Tina grabbed the crystal out of Yuki's hands. Tiny purple sparks ran up the silk cord and spread out over Tina with a little flash. An icy shockwave rippled through the room, rattling the tea maker and fluttering the pages of Mrs. Flack's magazines.
Nice! Where'd you get that?
Oh, from a friend. I got something else, too.
Yuki picked up Crowley's jacket off the chair and held it up to show Tina. When Tina saw the flaming skulls, her eyes popped.
Whoa! No way.
Tina shimmered over to the jacket and examined it closer. She recognized Sloane's painted skulls anywhere, only the jacket looked so old and faded now. Then she remembered how much time had passed for everybody else.
Is she still around? What happened to her?
Yeah, I meant to tell you before. She lives across the street, actually.
No way! Sloane, get her over here!
Suddenly, Yuki looked a little meek.
Well, she sort of hates this place. And me.
Tina rocked with sudden laughter, which sent out another shockwave that actually nudged away some of the furniture.
Sounds like her. Hey, wait a minute. So how'd you get the jacket then?
Yuki blushed slightly.
From her son? Crowley?
Tina rolled her eyes.
Leave it to Sloane to name her kid Crowley. She always was a little witchy.
Then Tina raised an eyebrow and looked over at Yuki.
So, Crowley, huh? You sly dog. What is he? Like, your boyfriend?
Yeah, not exactly.
As Yuki's cheeks began to burn, Mrs. Flack's voice suddenly rang out over the loudspeaker. Yuki moved over to the laden tea trolley, sighed, and pushed up her cardigan sweater sleeves again.
I guess I gotta go.
Tina saluted as Yuki rolled away through the double doors.
Have fun now.
Tina smiled down at the amethyst crystal in her hand. She slipped the black silk cord around her neck and vanished in a shower of purple sparks.
Oh man, this is gonna be good.
Yuki emerged from the mirrored corridor and was immediately struck by Mrs. Flack's choice of lilting music that seemed to hang in the air of the vast foyer. Yuki rolled the trolley to the circular counter where Mrs. Flack was busy on the phone. She broke away from her call and waved Yuki away.
Yes, yes, that's fine. Now just circulate and smile.
Yuki tried her best. The trolley was cumbersome and strained under the extra load Mrs. Flack had piled onto it. She plotted her course through the tiny sea of ladies who were all seated, wearing frozen expressions imperceivable behind their dark glasses. Yuki diligently made her rounds, trying to be as politely professional as she could. Dark glasses and scarf-wrapped heads shook barely perceptibly in her direction, though sadly, most didn't even acknowledge her.
Would you like some tea? Would you... Excuse,
It wasn't going so well.
Want some tea?
She had made a complete circuit of the place, and nobody wanted anything off of her overly burdened trolley.
Ugh.
Then she noticed a lady that she had missed before. She was sitting on her own in a discreet corner by the stairs. Apparently a mere scarf and dark glasses weren't enough camouflage for this particular client. She had opted for an entire black veil draped over a wide-brimmed hat. She sat as still as a statue with a smoldering cigarette in a long holder held in a gloved hand. Yuki couldn't help thinking that she had caught a slight gleam flash from behind the veil, like the glare of predatory eyes burning into her. A chill ran down her spine as she remembered the red X from her seating chart, the client named Battery. Yuki made a discreet yet decisive about-face, aiming the trolley in the opposite direction, where at least someone seemed to have noticed her. The two ladies were seated together, and one was waving a lacy handkerchief in Yuki's direction.
You there, girl?
Yuki wheeled closer. A quick glance at her chart revealed that these two were Carstairs and Bilsey. They couldn't have been more opposite. Carstairs looked like a shrunken porcelain doll with a heart-shaped face and a halo of fine golden curls around her wide-set, watery blue eyes. Bilsey, on the other hand, was stout and squarish, with small, dark, angry eyes that glinted like flint. They both had that strange opalescence in the whites of their eyes, and the same hollow, hungry quality that reminded Yuki of Philgrave. They seemed to be conferring about something between them as Yuki approached.
It's really most astonishing. She's the spitting image of her, isn't she, Bibi?
Yes, I thought so the moment I saw her. But Ellie, how could that be?
I'm sure I don't know, my dear, but it has to be her. The hair, Bibi. Look at her hair. Oh, poor, poor Sunilla. All those years ago.
Excuse me. Would you like some tea?
The pair merely stared at her in silence, their eyes shining. Thankfully for Yuki, Mrs. Flack's timing couldn't have been more perfect.
Mrs. Carstairs, Mrs. Bilsey, we're ready for you now. This way, please.
Yuki watched the two little old ladies stand and follow Mrs. Flack towards DeVinter's studio while shooting little looks back at her every few steps. Yuki decided then and there that staying out of sight for as long as she could was going to be her best strategy for making it through the day. She noticed that the conservatory above seemed empty, so she built up a little momentum and steered herself up the ramp. As Mrs. Flack's canned muzak played on, Yuki surveyed the general overview of the Belfare. She had to admit, it seemed a little sad, like something well past its prime and long gone to seed. In the midst of her reflection, the trolley suddenly shuddered and shook.
Whoa! What's happening?
Laughter rang out, and the tea trolley was covered in a shower of purple sparks as Tina appeared.
Hey, how about we get this party started?
The trolley lurched forward. Yuki's hand seemed to be glued to the handle. She dragged her feet, trying to stop, but the trolley actually built up speed as it headed for the top of the marble staircase.
Tina, what are you doing?
Just a little indoor trolley surfing. Yee-haw!
The trolley shot out, wheels spinning with trails of purple sparks. Yuki still hanging on for dear life. Mrs. Flack appeared from the mirrored corridor in time to see the trolley in mid-flight.
Yuki, what are you doing?
The trolley crash-landed with a loud metallic crunch, as well as a series of echoey whoops and giggles. Yuki was tossed aside out of harm's way in a shower of cream cheese frosting. Mrs. Battery hadn't fared so well, having received the full impact of the flying trolley. Her chair was overturned, her skeletal legs poking out at a rather unladylike angle, covered in an assortment of tasty comestibles and most of the samovar's tea. Mrs. Flack rushed over and stooped to look at the crumpled figure.
Oh, Mrs. Battery, are you...
She lifted the veil and recoiled back with a shock.
Ugh.
Yes, apparently the veil was there for a reason. There was a sudden tinkling sound from the large chandelier high above. Mrs. Flack looked up and gasped at the blue-haired girl hovering overhead.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about her if I were you.
What?
The tinkling increased, and with a flash of purple light, there was an ominous snap, and the chandelier fell crashing to the floor.
Oh no! Watch out!
Mrs. Flack managed to jump out of the way at the last second and avoid being hit by a shower of shattering crystal. The powdery vultures scattered, screaming and stumbling for the exit. Tina's howls of laughter sounded as she swooped and circled overhead.
That's right, bitches! You better run!
I think that will be quite enough, Miss Bleeberman.
Mr. DeVinter had arrived from the mirrored corridor, wearing his blue-tinted lenses. A partially processed Mrs. Carstairs and Mrs. Bilsey trailed timidly behind him.
I thought we had this little problem contained, but I see I was mistaken.
Tina gave Derwinter the finger and continued to circle overhead, her aura of purple sparks surging at the sight of him.
Oh yeah? What you got? Take your best shot, scumbag!
And Derwinter did just that. Without a pause, he reached into his suit jacket, produced a rather formidable silver pistol, and aimed squarely at Tina.
I've got you in my sights now, Miss Blieberman. Do try and stay dead this time.
Derwinter fired a series of shots at Tina, each one hitting their mark. Tina glared back defiantly, but before she could make a quip about what was the point of trying to shoot her when she was already dead, Tina's purple sparking fury was suddenly quenched. A look of surprise spread across her face as her substance rippled and stretched. She puffed up like a balloon and popped with an exploding cry of fury and a cloud of swirling brackish vapor. Huddled on the floor, Mrs. Flack covered her head from the fallout. Something fell from above and landed tinkling on the floor in front of her.
What's this?
She picked up a purple crystal on a black silk cord. The air was thick with salty fumes. Yuki's head felt a little rattled, but she managed to stand and retreated to a far corner out of sight. Derwinter looked a little disheveled, but managed to maintain his composure. The few matrons that remained looked worse for the wear. They began to climb out from behind overturned chairs, coughing in the haze. Derwinter surveyed the Belfair. It was in a total shambles. He kicked away a few errant finger sandwiches out of his path, and his glare fell on Mrs. Flack as she crawled to her feet.
Confound it, Flack! This has to be a new zenith of incompetence, even for you! Is this what you call managing? No? Well, what exactly do you call all of this?
He flicked away a broken teacup with his shoe.
I don't know.
Mrs. Flack struggled, clearly shaken.
I just don't know.
Derwinter's temper flared.
I trust you with a few simple tasks, and you manage to bungle everything. Well, I've had it. How did I tell you? You can take your clipboard and your canapes and clear out.
He spoke with a sudden sweeping flourish of his hand that slapped Mrs. Flack across the face. The gesture may have been accidental, but Derwinter didn't exactly rush to an apology. Mrs. Flack was taken aback.
Fine. If you think I'm going to waste any more time here, fine. Yes, all right, fine. I quit.
Mrs. Flack straightened herself and marched away towards the parking garage, just as the sliding glass doors opened to admit a very bewildered-looking Mr. Halliday.
What's going on in here?
Mrs. Flack stopped and planted a resounding kiss on his unsuspecting lips.
See you round, handsome.
With a flirtatious flip of her hair, Mrs. Flack sauntered out through the sliding glass doors. While Derwinter sorted out the remainder of his clients, Yuki managed to slip away unnoticed. Her plan was to get upstairs as fast as possible. She even thought about calling the doctor, just to share a little bit about how her first day at work had gone. Just as she entered the mirrored corridor, she noticed that the panel on the end was ajar again, revealing the dark stairwell. She revisited her memory of her previous trip down those stairs, tentacles creeping out of the wall. Yuki thought she should be sure it wasn't all a dream, maybe just a little peek, just to make sure that she had her facts straight before she unleashed any potential scrutiny from the doctor. And once more, Yuki found herself on the stairwell that led down to the underground tea pool. And again, the place felt strangely familiar and oddly comforting. Yuki descended and all seemed quiet. The pool was now completely full, and the heady scent of the tea permeated the air. In the corner of the room, by the crack in the wall, Yuki noticed a patch of color. Something bright yellow and shiny lay among the broken tiles. Yuki recognized it at once. It was Daisy Von Bruin's jaunty visor. Then something surfaced from the center of the pool. The same strange, tentacled, hulking shape. It seemed to be swimming leisurely in its pool of pungent tea without a care in the world. Yuki noticed that its skin wasn't black anymore. It had changed to a soft pink, which made it seem somehow less threatening. Yuki wondered if maybe the thing was like a squid and changed its colors depending on its mood. It gracefully glided across the surface towards Yuki, then dipped and resurfaced, swimming away in the opposite direction. Yuki noticed the portion of the creature which remained above the surface looked slightly like a misshapen head. It even had a few little black rocks stuck in it that looked like eyes and a nose, making a sort of rudimentary face. Yuki wondered if it was just her imagination, but the thing looked like it was smiling a little. She reached out a hand as the thing made another pass close to her. Then, suddenly, a loud voice rang out from above.
Stop where you are! Don't move!
Derventer had appeared at the top of the stairs, holding what looked like a remote control in his hand. He pushed a button and there was a loud metallic clanking sound from above the teepool. Yuki jumped out of the way and looked up. A large, round, ornate grate suspended from heavy chains dropped from above. It slammed on top of the pool and was locked into place.
There, you see? I've saved you.
Derventer tucked the remote device in his breast pocket and triumphantly descended the stairs. Yuki backed away from the pool. The thing's tentacles wrapped themselves around the grate and struggled. The metal groaned but held fast. Yuki noticed that the thing's skin was becoming blotchy, gradually darkening back to its original inky black. The thing sloshed around, clearly agitated. It emitted a deep, rumbling groan like an angry purr. Yuki retreated, making her way up the stairs as Derventer closed in.
Yes, my dear, that's right. You run along now. I'll deal with this.
He approached the pool with a look of pure delight, while he produced a rather large and sinister syringe.
That's right, baby. I've got you now. And this time, you're not going anywhere.
Yuki had fled without a word. She had run up several flights of stairs and through many doorways until she reached her room. She removed the cardigan sweater and threw it on the floor. She collapsed on her bed. The rain continued to tap on her windows relentlessly. Yuki rolled over and stared at her cell phone. Her resolve to call the doctor had ebbed away. The doctor's cold-as-steel analysis wasn't what she needed just then. Yuki dug into her pocket and found the crumpled piece of paper Crowley had written his number on. She grabbed her phone and dialed, even though she wondered how much more weirdness she could get away with telling Crowley before she scared him off completely. Then she would really be alone. Part of Yuki was actually relieved when the call went straight to voicemail. She hung up, unsure of what to say. The day had been too much for her. She lay on her side, curled into a ball, and hugged her phone as the storm raged outside. Meanwhile, across the street above the Golden Calf, Crowley's cell phone rang, but he dared not take the call.
Mom! You gotta listen to me!
Sloane shook her head and held up her hand.
Oh no, no way. I don't want to hear it. I've already wasted enough time dealing with those people. Look, I'm really sorry about your little friend.
She nodded to his phone, at which Crowley glowed bright red.
It's not about Yuki, Mom. It's about Tina Bleiberman.
Sloane looked at her son with cold shock as he showed her the yellow post-it with Tina's name scribbled on it.
I think we should call Dad. I think he should go check it out.
Sloane's shock thawed and went supernova, with a little shockwave you could almost feel.
Oh, Crowley, no. Don't go getting your father involved. Tina's gone. Let's just let her rest in peace.
Crowley looked his mother square in the eye.
That's kind of the point, Mom. Tina is not exactly resting.
And so, Chapter 8 comes to a close. I'd like to thank guest voices on this episode. Mike Bennett as Milford Coyle. Tawny Tackett as Lady Iwanaga. Sally Clausen as the Doctor, Jennifer Viale as Mrs. Flack, Lisa Snare as Tina, and Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and incomptech.com. For more info, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 9, and until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.